home, but really tough leaving that little boy. But we had a very good week, and grateful for God for such opportunity to avail themselves. And glad to be home. And I want to personally thank Brother Jeannie Sims for taking my place in the pulpit last Wednesday. I want to thank Buddy Steele for taking my class on Wednesday night. I want to thank Don for taking class on short notice. And Buddy was sick, and I'm appreciative. Buddy's getting a little better, I hope. And, it's also good to know somebody I called on when I need somebody for the adult class. So, you're on the list. I'm thankful for that, and I'm thankful for opportunities that men take upon themselves to fill in when I'm away. Why don't you take your Old Testament up? I'm going to the book of 2 Samuel. We'll begin there in just a moment. You know, there are many lessons in the Old Testament that are helpful to us who live in this time, in times that we have difficulty in our lives. It is not by design, nor is it very pleasant to have to deal with times with people and relationships that are very close and dear to our heart, especially relationships with our children. I'm reminded constantly, being a parent and having four children of my own, to understand that children are the greatest blessing, one of the greatest blessings, I should say, that God has blessed us with. But with that responsibility and blessing comes great responsibility. And I can say without much reservation that my children have been my, brought me some of the greatest happiness I had in my life. But I can tell you in the same breath that some of the greatest heartache that I've had to deal with is a direct relationship to my children and some of the decisions that they make. And sometimes we wonder about what we should do when our children do not do the things that we would like them to do. I'm not so much talking about when they're in our home, but I'm talking about after they leave our home. I want to talk this morning about a man who had this problem. Not with one child, not with two, but with three. And I want to talk about today the lessons that we can learn from King David as he grieved for his son. There are three biblical accounts of difficulties that arose in David's life, some by his own hand, and those by the decisions sometimes his children had made, and how he had to deal with those situations, and how he grieved for sometimes the decisions that his son had made. In our study today, we're going to look at three sons that David buried. He buried three of his children. And he would have died in their place if it was at all possible that he could do so. He would have gladly taken their place. In 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 33, the Bible says, and we'll read more about this later, it says, "Then the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate, and he wept. And as he went up, he said thus, 'O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I had died in your place, O Absalom, my son, my son.'" In this biblical account that's in 1 Samuel chapter 18, that really begins a couple chapters before, he was talking about the death of one of his sons, Absalom. And we'll talk more about his death in just a moment. But as you can imagine, the grief that this father had in understanding that Absalom has now perished, and the circumstances that Absalom perished under are not very favorable. And I'm sure that adds to David's grief. But we want to see that grief is a natural response to things when they happen to us that bring us pain and anguish and heartache. That this is a real emotion that we can have, not just when our children, heaven forbid, would die, but when they do things that we know have serious, serious consequences. And so it's not something that we're not aware of, and we don't understand the emotion of pain that can come with our children. There are three lessons that I want to talk about today in David's personal grief for three sons. Now, all three of them are different and under different circumstances, but all of them can teach us some valuable lessons in dealing with death and dealing with disappointment and in dealing with close family relationships to those who are not doing what we know they ought to be doing. We're going to look at three sons. We're going to look at David's grief for an innocent son, his grief for an immoral son, and his grief for an insolent son. The one that will probably be most beneficial to us, we'll talk about tonight, and that is the insolent son, the rebellious son. And we'll talk about him tonight, Lord willing. But I want to look at these three individuals, and I want to look at how David handled them, and what lessons we can learn from David's grief. Grief is a real human emotion. It is an emotion that can have a lot of effect on us physically and emotionally and spiritually. When we face a difficult situation, it can either strengthen us, it can give us deeper resolve, or it could simply destroy us. And it depends on how you handle it. And this first one is one that is very difficult to deal with in our life. And that's the David's grief for an innocent son. David, in 2 Samuel chapter 11, goes out on his balcony while his army is in the field fighting, and Joab is leading his army. And instead of being with his army, he stayed back in the palace. And he just went out to get a breath of air, I would expect. The Bible doesn't really tell us why he went on the top of the palace of his house. But when he did, he looked over, and there was a woman bathing. Now, what David should have done is he should have walked, turned around and walked back and went into his palace, but he didn't. He continued to look, and he was mystified by her beauty. And so he called to inquire who she was. And she was the wife of a man named Uriah the Hittite. Now, Uriah was well known to David because he was one of his leaders of his army that was out fighting in the field. And so this was this man's wife. And so even after he found out that this man was married to one of his soldiers, he still called for her. And when she answered that call and came to see him, they committed adultery. And when they committed adultery, it happened that she became pregnant. And so now David is in a dilemma. He has committed adultery with one of his soldiers. He is the king of Israel. And now he has to deal with this situation. And what he does is he complicates his sin. And what he does is he adds to his sin. He brings Uriah back. And he brings him back under disguise to asking him how the battle is going and what's going on. And then after he gets that report, he gives him a meal. And then he tells him to go rest and go down to his home. And then he can go back to the field on the next day. Now, David was hoping that he would go into his home and he would lie with his wife. And then when she announced that she was with child, there would be no complications and Uriah would think it was his child and there'd be no problem. But Uriah was an honorable man. And instead of going into his house and resting and being with his wife, he slept out on the doorpost of his house and did not even go in the door. Well, he finds out about that and then he brings Uriah back. He says, "Why did you not rest? Why did you not take your ease in your own home?" He says, "How could I go into my home and lie with my wife and be in comfort when my men are on the field of battle sleeping on the ground?" He was an honorable man. So instead of being discouraged, David thinks, well, he'll keep him one more day and he'll get him drunk and intoxicate him. And then he'll send him down to his house and he'll go and be with Bathsheba and that'll take care of it. But that didn't happen. Again, he did not spend the night in his home. So now, what's he going to do? He complicates his sin further. He writes a letter. And he signs it with his signature. seals it and gives it to Uriah. And says, you take this letter and you give it to Joab when you go back to the battle. He never, and you know he'll never open that letter. Because he's an honorable man. It wasn't written to him, it was written to Joab. So he delivered it to Joab, and the letter says, I want you to get in the fiercest battle. I want you to put Uriah in the forefront, and then I want you to pull back from him. And don't be alarmed by this. There is reason for what I'm doing. Just follow these instructions. Joab's a military person. He's under the command of the king. He's going to do exactly what the king tells him to do. He puts Uriah in the front of the battle as they're marching against a foe that's close to the thing that they're trying to accomplish. And they get him close enough where they can reach him with the arrow. And he's struck and he's killed. And he dies, and the word comes back to the king that they've won the battle, but Uriah the Hittite is dead. So Bathsheba goes into mourning. And after the period of mourning is over, she goes back to David, he calls for her, and she becomes his wife. End of story. Now she's his wife, she's with child, he's the father. Nobody can know any difference. Well, you and I know better than that. And so did David. In 2 Samuel, chapter number 12, Nathan comes to David. And he tells David a little story. He says, there was this rich man that had flocks and flocks of sheep. And there was this poor man that had a little lamb that he raised as like one of his own children, that he had raised from birth, and he was always with the man. And a stranger came, and it was time to make a meal and to prepare a feast for the man to feed him. And instead of taking one of his lambs, that he had many, he took this poor man's lamb that was like a pet to him, and he killed it, and he dressed it, and he gave it to the traveler to eat. And Nathan said, what do you think we ought to do with the man? And David was wroth. He was angry. He said, that man should have to return fourfold what he's done. And then Nathan said, David, you're the man. Uriah had one wife. You had many wives. And the text says, if that was not enough, God would have given you more. And you took this man's only wife, and you did what was shameful, and you killed Uriah the Hittite, and you gave cause for the enemies of God to blaspheme. Now, what was the penalty for death? Death penalty was for adultery. He had committed adultery, and he was worthy, and so was Bathsheba, of being put to death. Now, if he'd have been Saul would have blamed Bathsheba. So he'd have blamed something. He would have not have taken accountability, but David didn't do that. David knew he was wrong. He says, I have sinned in verse 13. Nathan said, God's put away your sin. But there's a penalty. Verse 14. However, because of the deed that you have given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme, the child also who is to be born to you shall surely die. Then Nathan departed his house, and the Lord struck the child that Uriah's wife bore to David, and he became ill. This is God's punishment. Two punishments. Number one, this child's going to die. And the death is never going to be far from your household from this day forward. Now, some people make the argument that David really didn't get punished. That's a lie. David did get punished. And he's going to pay many times for this sin. If you do not believe me, read Psalms chapter 51. And read that entire psalm. That's written by a man who knows that his sin caused a lot of things to happen. So he knew that his child faced death because he knew that God carried out what he said. God didn't make idle threats, and God did exactly what he said he would do. And so now the child is sick. What's David going to do? He knew the child faced death. How do you react when a loved one faces death? Someone that's very near and precious to you. What do? You do exactly what David did. He went to God for help. Where would you go? Where would anybody go? You go to God because that's the greatest source of help when you face something that you cannot fix yourself. David couldn't fix this. He pleaded for God for mercy. He pleaded for compassion. He pleaded that this child might not die. 7 days, not eating, not drinking, fasting, praying every day for that child would recover and that he would not die. Now, in verse 16 it says, David therefore pleaded with God for the child. And David fasted and went in and laid all night on the ground. So the elders of his house arose and went to him to raise up him up from the ground, but he would not, nor did he eat any food with them. He's begging and he's pleading. He knew that the only resource to solve this problem was God. He knew penitent prayer because his sin caused danger. This child is dying because of David's sin. This child has done nothing. He's an innocent child. And he's dying because of the sin done by David. His loving prayer demonstrates the love that a father has for his child. He's a hopeful prayer. He's praying and hoping that God will hear him. And he's trusting God that he'll know and he'll do what is best. Now, many people look at this account and think that God is cruel in this. But you need to understand something about God. We are free moral agents. And we can do whatever we choose to do. But sometimes we make choices that hurt innocent people. People do this every day. A drunk gets behind the wheel of a car, knowing that he's impaired and believing and deluding himself that he can still do what he's supposed to do. And gets out and kills a family, kills a child, wipes out a whole family and walks away unscathed. What did the family do? What did the children in that car do? Nothing. They're a victim of being at the wrong place at the wrong time and the foolish decision of one person. God didn't do that. The foolish decision did that. And what was happening to this child? God didn't do this. David's action caused this to happen. David's action caused this child to be dying. So what happens after 7 days? The child dies. And the men are sitting there talking and whispering. And David says, "Is the child dead?" They're afraid to tell David. They don't know what he'll do. He's been fasting and pleading and crying and begging. And now the child died and they're afraid to tell him. They don't know what he will do. How does he react to the death of his son? Verse 20. So David arose from the ground, washed and anointed himself, and changed his clothes, and he went into the house of the Lord, and he worshipped. Then he went to his own house, and when he requested, they set food before him, and he ate. So, he's pleading, he's begging, he's crying, he's fasting and weeping for 7 days. And then the child dies. He gets up. He cleans himself up. He goes down to the house of the Lord and he worships. Let me ask you something. If David didn't blame God, how can anyone here blame God? David didn't blame God. David knew where the blame lied. And the blame lied with the foolish decision that God's servant David had made. But how is he going to react? Why does he react in this way? Why does he go and eat? Why does he clean up? Why does he go down to the house of the Lord? And why does he worship? He accepts the death of his son because he did it by, he accepted it in faith. Look at verse number 21. David will answer it. Then his servant said to him, "What is this that you have done? You fasted and wept for the child while he was alive, and now the child died, and you arose and you ate food." They don't understand. They thought he'd be distraught. They thought he'd go out of his mind. But instead of doing that, he worshiped God. He gets over in his daily activities, and they don't understand. Why does he react in such a way? He gives us the answer in verse 22 and 23. He said, "While the child was alive, I fasted and wept. For I said, who can tell whether the Lord will be gracious to me that the child may live? But now he is dead. Why should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me." David accepted God's answer. And ladies and gentlemen, when you pray, you may not always get the answer that you want. I've stood by many a bed in hospitals, in nursing homes, in beds of members of the church, in people that I love, my grandparents, and I've prayed fervently for God's grace and mercy to be extended. And on many occasions, that person died. Did God not hear my prayer? Did God say no? Or did life just take its course as God has promised that it will? Prayer, answered prayer, is not prayer that you get what you want. That's not what answered prayer is. Prayer answered is God hearing and God doing what He knows best, whether you and I understand that or not. And there's times when you don't. But what did he mean? I cannot go to him. I can go to him, but he cannot come to me. What is he talking about? Well, here's what he's talking about. The dead maintain personal identity. He knew this child. He knew where this child was going. And he was not worried where the child was headed because he knew where he was going. Where was he headed? He was headed to be with God. That child was innocent. That child is with God. And that is the silver lining behind any child that ever dies. That is the silver lining. That he is with a merciful and just God, and God will tend and take care of that child. The dead maintain personal identity. The dead are in Hades till the resurrection. They are somewhere. The innocent child is saved and has a hope for heaven because he died without sin. He didn't die because of his sin. He died because of the sin of his father and mother. That was God's punishment for David's sin. Now, if you don't like the punishment, you'll have to take that up with God. But the child, he is in heaven. He is being taken care of by God. He is in a place of rest and peace. Do you remember what Job said when he was going through all of his struggles and all of his difficulties? What did he say at one point? "It would have been better that I had never been born. Because then I would have never seen the light of day. I would have never had to deal with sin. I would have had to never struggle with the difficulties of life. I would never have to live and watch 10 of my children die in one day. If I had never been born, I would never have had to experience that." Doesn't that make sense? Can you ever get to a point in your life where you think that if I had never been born, it would have been better? But the forgiven sinner has the same hope that the child does. We have the hope of heaven too. And the saved will be in heaven. It's an eternal reward promise for the faithful. You know what? It sounds harsh to us. It sounds harsh to us that this child died. Were you going to question God? Would you blame God if the father who caused this child, this penalty to come upon him, goes in the temple and worships of God? If he doesn't blame him, how in the world can we? David knew he was the one that was guilty. And if you read the Psalms, ladies and gentlemen, David never forgot how he felt about that. He grieved about that for the rest of his life. I want you to learn something from this. We sometimes think it's difficult and it's hard to be hard on our children and to correct them and to do the things that they need to do because we're afraid, because we want this relationship that we have with them, and we think it's odd to take a strong stance and to punish and discipline them. But brethren, there are worse things awaiting an undisciplined child that goes astray if they die in that condition. There are worse things that can happen to them. And temporary hurt is nothing compared to the eternal hurt if they die unprepared to meet God. Is it? When our loved ones face death, we need to turn to God in prayer. Because here's a subject that you can't do by yourself. A person cannot deal with death without God. And we know that by experience. Who else can make sense out of death except God? Your parents. I've watched my mom and dad bury my brother. That's a road God never intended anybody to ever walk alone. God knows the heartache in that. And you and I cannot even begin to understand unless you've been down that road. But the only one that can help you is God. He's the only one that can help you. Because He can comfort you. He gives you the assurance that that child is fine. That child is in a good place. And you know there's something to be said to escape all the mayhem and the heartache that's in this world that child will never have to contend with. Now, we'd rather have it with us, wouldn't we? But that might be a little selfish, wouldn't it? Let us accept death. Prepare for, you know what, we're going to die. You know, my parents are growing older. And I know if things take their natural course, one day I'm going to have to bury them. Now, that's not pleasant. I don't spend a lot of time. Well, that's not true. The older I get, I do spend some time thinking about that. But, you know, that's part of life. I can't stop it. I don't want to experience it, but I can't stop it. But I got to prepare for it. Let us prepare to join the safe and the saved. Only by a faithful relationship in Christ can you deal with death. You can't deal with death in any other way. You know what? I've done a lot of funerals in my day, but there's not a harder funeral that I've ever done to do with somebody that rebelled against God during their lifetime. And I've done a couple of those. And it's hurtful. Man, it's hurtful. Because I can't get up there and I can't make it go away. And I can't make it right. And I can't fix it. And I can't really offer comfort. But I try to. I'm not the judge. I don't make the final decision. But I know what the standard is. And I know what the judge will say. I've been in hospitals, ladies and gentlemen, where people have begged me to ask me to pray that God will take their loved one who's in terrible pain and suffering, but they're unprepared to meet God. I can't offer that prayer. I pray that God's will be done. I pray for compassion. I pray for mercy. I pray for comfort for the family. But I'm not going to pray for God to take the life of one who's not ready to meet him in judgment. And the second thing is, it's not God who determines if that person lives or dies anyway. You know what I detest today? I detest to go to a funeral and say a man that stands up in front of a bunch of people at a time of grief where people are hurting and where people are grieving and say that God took this person. God doesn't take anybody in death. People die because of sin. The person that's responsible for death is Satan. It is not God. It was not God's design that man die. When man was created, he had access to the tree of life. Death was never part of God's plan. Death came because of man's foolish choice and because he yielded to Satan and he fell into sin and death came upon all men. Let me ask you a question. Why did Jesus weep at the grave of Lazarus? He was going to raise Lazarus from the dead. Why was he grieving? You know, the shortest passage in the Bible, John 11:35, it says Jesus wept and the people said, oh, how he loved him. Why did Jesus weep when he knew he was going to raise him from the dead? You know why Jesus wept? Because of what he saw, the effects of sin on the people left behind. And you know what? Funerals are for the living. Funerals are for the living. It's for us who have to go on. It's the void. It's the emptiness. It's the thing that we have to let go. That's tough. That's difficult. And these funerals are for to help us to do that. And they're to remind us that this death is coming for us. And that we need to prepare. And when a loved one faces death, you need God. You need God. He's the only one that can be of help. Ladies and gentlemen, innocent people die every day. People that did nothing wrong. The 3,000 people that were in the trade tower on September 11th, they did nothing wrong. They weren't being punished. It wasn't because God was sending a message. That's ridiculous. They were in the wrong place at the wrong time. And all men die. God didn't say under what circumstance. And ladies and gentlemen, let me add one more thing. The circumstance that you die doesn't mean that that's going to equate to you having an eternal home. It's terrible about how those people died. I grieve for them, their families, their children, their parents, their spouses. I grieve for them. But the way that they died does not determine where they'll spend eternity. Because the day of their death was one day. They had many days before that day. And they'll be judged by the totality of their life, not how they died. We need to just trust God. And God will do what is best. But David had another son. And we won't talk about him because I've taken more time than I wanted to talk about the first one. I want to just say a couple things. There is no more traumatic thing that you will ever face in your life than death. Even when people are ready to go, it's tough. It's tough to say goodbye. It's tough to let go. It's tough to not want them here with us. But I want to ask you an honest question. We had a tough year last year. We lost some good folks. But I want to ask you an honest question. Would any of us, as much as we love them, as much as we care for them, as much as we enjoyed their company and what they brought into our lives, would any of us really want them back now? Really? Not me. They lived their life in hopes of something better when this life ended. And they prepared their whole life for that journey. And now they've arrived. You know, my grandparents died. I did their funerals in 91 and 94, and I miss them. I miss them to this day. But I would never want them to come back now. Because I know what they lived their life for. I know what they wanted. I know what they wanted to do one day. And now they've achieved it. I'm happy for them. I'm not very happy for me. I'd rather have them here. I'll admit it. But that's selfish. You know, I don't have all the answers to when people die and why they die. I don't even have all the answers. And I struggle. I'll be honest, and many of you, I've done 12 funerals since I've been here. And I struggle at every one of them to know what to say. How to comfort, how to help ease the pain. I struggle. Because I know it hurts. I know that it's a hole. I know it's empty. I know there's a void. I know it. But brethren, if the person is with the Lord, if the person dies in Christ, and they die with hope, you need to get your mind wrapped around that. Because that's the greatest comfort that you will ever have. To know that your loved one is with the Lord. At the same time, the greatest heartache that you will ever feel, and the deepest emotion you will ever feel, is if one dies unprepared to meet God, and you had in your ability to try to change that while they lived, and you didn't. You can't make them do what's right. But ladies and gentlemen, you can try if you have an avenue to do it. And I'll just leave you with one example. I've got a father who I love a great deal, who made a decision 40 years ago to leave the Lord, to leave his church, to leave everything that he taught me. And to this day, 40 years later, I grieve. And I use every opportunity that I have around him to tell him, Dad, don't wait. Get your life straightened out. Get things right before you leave this life. He may never do it. I hope he does. I pray he does. But if he doesn't, one thing I will never do, I will never say, what if I had done this? What if I had done that? Because I've done all those things. I've done, I believe, what God expects me to do. Our relationship is different. You know, I'd love to have a relationship with my father that many of you here are interrelated, and you have a very close relationship, and I'm thankful to God for that. That's a real blessing, and you ought to thank God for that. But even though I've had to sacrifice that, and I've sacrificed a lot of that because of his decision, do I regret it? I regret that he made that decision. I don't regret what I've done because I know what I'm trying to do. I'll salvage the physical relationship if I can get his soul right with God. You see, brethren, you got to determine what's more important. Is the physical relationship that you enjoy more important than where that person will spend eternity? We need to give sober consideration to that. And I don't think there's a harder thing to face than when it's one of your own children. I've got two that are not where they need to be. It goes through my mind every day. Oh, I know, I didn't raise them. That doesn't matter. They're still my children. And it hurts. I know it hurts. But I'll tell you what, I spent every waking moment in their presence to try to encourage them, to influence them, to try to get their life right with God. You know why I do that? Because I love them. Do we love the people closest to us enough to want them to be right with the Lord? I hope we do. I hope we do. Because I guarantee you what? Satan wants them with them. Satan wants him with him. And if we don't want to make the tough decision, that's okay with Satan. He'll gladly take them. But you know what I think about that? Satan already has enough. Let's give a few more to God. If you're here and you're not a Christian, you need to have a relationship with God. If you are a Christian, you know better than anyone else that there's times in life that things are rough, things are tough. And you know what? Life didn't say it was always going to be easy. But God did say, if you trust me, if you do it my way, it will be better. And it will definitely be better at the end. Do we really believe that? Or do we just give that lip service? Sometimes there's tough decisions to make, brethren. But if we don't make them, who's to blame? Surely not God. He's told us the better way. We just have to do it. If we can help you this morning in any way, we bid you to come forward.